Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Jasmine Leyva. Thanks for being with us, Jasmine.
Thank you for having me.
Jasmine, we usually start out by asking our guest what turned them vegan.
Oh, okay. So I went vegan for purely superficial reasons. Initially, so I'll put that up front. I saw this Bobette Davis. She's a chef in Los Angeles, and she owns a vegan restaurant called Stuff I Eat. And I saw her body, and she was like, 60 at the time, and I was like, oh my god, she looks amazing. I want to look just like her, and I want to be just like her, and I want to age just like her. And she told me that she ate, a vegan diet, 70% raw. So I was like, okay, I have to try that. And then as I started reading more vegan books, I learned about, kind of like the health aspects. So then I was into it for the health. And then after, I started learning about the compassion element. Uh-huh. And then I became really inspired by just living a compassionate life.
Yeah, that certainly helps solidify the lifestyle when you realize there's so many other great benefits other than just the health perks.
Yeah.
Well, you grew up in D.C. What was your childhood like in terms of traditional meals and foods?
My mother, she did a good job. She would put a vegetable on the plate. Like I would have vegetables, a starch, and a meat for dinner, because that's what she had been taught to believe was a healthy, balanced diet. Mm-hmm. And same thing for school. Like she would send me, maybe I would have like a turkey sandwich and, two types of fruit, like one kind of more tropical and then one basic, like an apple, and then two, and two snacks. So she tried to keep it really balanced.
Yeah, that's most people struggle with, changing their diet because they grow up eating a particular way, making that transition to veganism can be a little bit challenging. And I think one of the things that you do so well in your new film, The Invisible Vegan, is also highlight how difficult it is for people of color to adapt to a vegan diet when so much of the imagery around veganism is very white and really doesn't speak to many different people in the community, and also touch on the fact that many different cultures for many, many years, thousands of years, have eaten more vegan than not. And so, sort of we have this perception of veganism as being white. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, like when you're, company, to take marketing, right? Because now veganism, even though it's a diet, it's a lifestyle philosophy, it's also a brand, right? Mm-hmm. So you look at companies and you look at who they market to. McDonald's, Wendy's, all these fast food places, they want they want Black people to eat at their restaurants. So guess what? They put out commercials and they put out imagery with people that look like us. So mm-hmm. we're getting that. We're getting the McDonald's billboards. But then on the other side of that, when, there were the green smoothies and the Whole Foods ads and, all the health ads. Now it's a little bit different. But back when I was young, that stuff wasn't marketed,
yeah.
To people like me. There were no, health billboards in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Even if you looked at the brochure or the cover of, a vegetarian brochure, you weren't going to see, maybe a thick Black girl with cornrows, it looks like she might be in the inner city on the cover. No, you're going to get some commercial friendly, super skinny, white blonde with a ponytail and rosy cheeks. Like that's what they would put on top of, all of their materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those things that has to be, we have to have more conversations about it because for too long now, people really have taken that for granted and really not paid enough attention to the fact that especially people in different vegan organizations. And, if you really want to have the greatest impact for animals, they have to make sure that they're trying to do outreach and also making the diet seem appealable to everyone.
And also, I'll hear people say going vegan is easy. So a lot of people who are already vegans, the animal rights community, whatever, I think they haven't even worked out what veganism looks like for people in low income communities. Not even just Black people, but the food stamp program, you get one person gets $192 a month, right?
Yeah.
So that's less than $50 a week for food. when you have a grocery store that doesn't have, like, the freshest produce. It's like, for that person, you know, what does veganism look like for them? You know, even when you, and a lot of people who are vegans, like a lot of vegans I know, you know, we take all these, like, healthy supplements as well. You know, like I pay $30 for my probiotics and I pay, you know, I have my B12. But for someone who only has $50 a week for food, you know, they can't get all the, you know, all the supplements. Not that there are a lot, but how can you even make that diet work, you know, in that price range? Like, they're not putting out enough material showing these people exactly how it's going to work, because it's going to be way more challenging.
Something else you talk about in the film is the fact that Black communities are typically in areas that don't have health stores or even well-stocked grocery stores. They're in food deserts, as it's called. And so that must also play a part in making it harder to be vegan.
Absolutely. You know, making it hard to be vegan, making it hard to eat healthy, period. Like, I know back in D.C., like, my mom stays in an area that's somewhat of a food desert. And when I went to the grocery store, you know, if you wanted, say you wanted organic tomatoes were like $7, you know, and they don't even cost that much. If you go to, like, if I go to an affluent neighborhood and I get, you know, I want organic tomatoes, they don't even cost $7 there.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it just seems like you guys, you know, whoever's in charge, like, you don't want these people to be healthy.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that you also talk about in the film a lot is about how food is tied in with our culture, and obviously that makes sense. And I think one of the challenges that you address in the film is how certain types of foods have been associated with African-American culture, and particular soul food. And really, I think one of the things that you do well, too, is just looking at that history and how that's evolved, and also about how people are trying to, people are judged based on what they're eating and how that affects their culture. So I think it was Tracy McCorder in the film who says, she talks about a story about where she was judged for not being Black enough because she didn't eat certain animal products. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit to that as well.
Yes. So food is on, when you think about, especially with Black culture, like, literally most, you know, we come from, you know, we come from some country in Africa. Most people don't know what country they come from. They don't know anything about that culture. So literally our culture was ripped from us. So the only thing, like, honestly, one of the only cultural markers that we can think of is, like, this food, you know, like, oh, soul food. That's a commonality. That's a cultural trait that we have. So now you have a group that vilifies the foods that we associate with our culture. So then if I become a part of that group, you know, I become a part of, like, the vegan group, if they're talking poorly about, like, our food ways, then it's like, it's not about me rejecting the food. Then it becomes like, you're rejecting your Blackness,
right?
You know, because they've been taught that this is the food that Black people eat. And now you're eating the food that has been marketed to white people for all these years. That's really not a white food, but that's how it translates to a lot of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So many cultures have been eating plant-based foods for so long, and yet, you know, sort of get narrow down with this one perception of the things that are acceptable to eat.
And the soul food, didn't it originate with slavery in the South?
Well, I'm not, you know, I always go tell people, like, I'm not a food scholar, but yes, a part of it originated in the South, where you had a bunch of people who had to try to make something out of nothing, and they turned these scraps into a delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have, you know, African influence, where people came from these West African countries and they're bringing their, like, you know, the way they season food and flavor food, they're bringing, you know, that food culture into kind of like what they have in America.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and one of my favorite meals that we had was either pinto beans or black-eyed peas and cornbread and collard greens. And, you know, I never thought about it being soul food until much later in life. And speaking of soul food, we have just a handful of either vegan-friendly or totally vegan restaurants in El Paso. And one of them, the Queen's Table, is basically a soul food vegan restaurant.
Ooh, okay. I need to go there.
Well,
I like the title, too.
Well, I think soul food also brings up the connotation of a comfort food as well. And I think, I think that's also part of the problem, too, is getting people to see the comfort foods shouldn't be the foods also that are killing you. You know, the comfort food needs to be the food that's also nourishing your soul and your body, and not just, you know, for the cultural reasons that we do things. We really have to eat for our health as well, as a testament to our culture and to our family and friends.
And finding an uplifting way to spread that message. Because I think some people, when they talk about soul food, they just talk about it like, oh, this is just food, instead of thinking of it like, hey, this is a part of someone's culture. So instead of, you know, I would never vilify it, but I would say like, hey, you know, how about we try, you know, we can make these greens with this particular set of seasonings and it'll taste so good we won't even need to add the bacon or the ham. You know, just finding a way to improve upon their foods instead of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Add some flax seeds to your cornbread.
Yeah.
Well, one of the major themes in your film, The Invisible Vegan, is also the healthcare issues and diseases involved, or I guess disease care, especially affecting African American communities. And one of the things that touched me is I think it was you that said that you'd never been to a funeral where someone had died of old age. And I think that really speaks volumes to the biggest problems facing many people in this country is really comes down to the food they're eating.
Yeah, because you look at other cultures, they sell us this thing like America, we're on top, we're the greatest country in the world, we're the most advanced. And then you start looking at the statistics and you're like, wait, if we're like the most advanced, how do you have like this many people sick? Like, this doesn't make sense. And then you look at other cultures who, you know, they have like zero, almost zero technology, and they're living to be 100, and they are dying of old age. So it does make you look at lifestyle. And I know in my film, I do put a lot of, the onus on food, but just honestly, like, it's the whole thing. It's, you know, how we're not getting enough sleep. We breathe in poison. You know, we're stressed out all the time. And like, so it's important for us to at least do what we can do to combat, you know, those other things.
Yeah.
Like, I can't stop breathing, you know, I can't stop breathing whatever smog is in Los Angeles air, but I know one thing, I'm not going to be breathing in smog and then eating meat with like hormones and stuff to make the situation that much worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in all the research that went into the film, I'm curious, what do you think was really one of the biggest challenges for getting people to see that link between the food that they're eating and their health problems specifically? What do you think's really the biggest challenge there?
Honestly, I think in my film, I felt that the biggest challenge was almost trying to find a way, because I feel like the word vegan and even like animal rights, like these were triggering to people in a negative way. You know, like if I say like, oh, you know, if I say like, oh, I'm not going to eat that, I'm trying to be more healthy, people are fine. But if I say like, oh, I'm not going to eat that, I'm vegan, then it becomes, for some people, it either becomes a point of curiosity or a point of contention, where it's like, why do you do that? And these people aren't for you. And, you know, so that was the biggest hurdle I found in my doc.
Hmm. I find it's easier if you surround yourself with vegans and cast away all those friends that eat meat.
Right.
We're still working
on it. I would say that.
Not as effective at making the world a better place, but it certainly helps your own mental state at times.
Well, and you know, I don't want to see them in person, but I'll talk to them over the radio.
Yeah. I think one of the other things going back to being able to eat, I think on a budget for so many people, you talk also about eating within your means. So we know when we have, if we got enough cash, you know, maybe we'd get the vegan crab cakes or the vegan processed foods at Whole Foods or Sprouts or whatever. But there are plenty of low cost plant-based foods that can really keep us healthy and sustain us.
Yeah, this is true. Like, you know, most people, and that becomes, you know, that becomes hard because if you don't, like I said, if you go back to the person with food stamps and they're living on less than $50 a week for food, especially if like you're a guy, right? It's going to be hard for you to get, to have like a super diverse diet with only $50. It's possible, but it is harder, but it is possible. So I think for me and my doc, I was speaking more to people who, you know, middle-class, kind of middle-class range, where it's just like, okay, this is completely doable easily if you're middle-class. If you're all, because most middle-class people, you go out, if you're getting fast food and you're spending $8-$9 for some fast food restaurant, you could just add an extra dollar or two and go to Whole Foods and get a dinner for the exact, if we're around like the same price point. Yeah. Or if you go to a, like I mentioned, if you go to an Asian place instead of the shrimp chow mein, just get the veggie chow mein. Yeah. You go to Chipotle instead of the steak burrito, get the veggie burrito. And it's actually going to come out cheaper because meat is the most expensive thing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a nice
And you're going to have, you know, in those places, usually they have like a lot of options for you.
Right.
I think there's also a gender factor involved. It's been my observation that more women become vegan than men, and I think it's due to a masculinity stereotype that men think they have to eat meat to be masculine and to be muscular, and that's really a shame. Most of the men I know that went vegan did it because their woman was vegan. And so
yeah, their spouse or their
yeah.
Yeah, it was strange because my cousin, it's funny, he's like a, you know, he's a workout junkie, you know, has the fit body. And, of course, his diet was completely just off the rails. And I never would have thought he would have went vegan. But he started actually asking me, like, hey, send me some more vegan stuff. And he transitioned to vegan. And he's like, yo, I can work out better than I could before. Yeah. Like, I could do more push-ups. Like, you know, so not only was it doable for him, but he was able to perform better as a result of it.
Yeah.
So I think he didn't expect that. And a lot of dudes don't expect that. Again, it comes down to marketing. When you think about how the vegan diet was marketed, it was marketed mostly, if I think of health in general, my mind automatically goes to a skinny blonde woman with a ponytail. Like, I don't, holding a green smoothie. That's just like the first reaction image I get. I don't get the image of like, say, a 6'5" Latino or like, you know, a Indian guy. Like, I don't have any of those images in my head. And guess what? They're not seeing those images either.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, as you point out in the film, too, that, you know, veganism can be seen, you know, despite society's changing views and people trying to be more body positive and, you know, accepting that we all come in different shapes and sizes, still yet people will see veganism as an attack on the black vegan body or, you know, particular body types that are associated with different ethnicities and backgrounds.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, like even not when you see more, you know, when you see white women, they seem to covet a thinner body type. And then you see like black women and, you know, Latinas, we tend to just naturally have more curves. So it's like, if you're promoting this real thin girl, you know, someone like me, I don't want to be the real thin girl, you know, like,
right.
So that's not going to appeal to me, you know, and that's not necessarily what happens when you go vegan anyway.
Oh no.
So just to promote like, you know, just different body types. Like, it's not about being skinny. You know?
Yeah.
Right. Well, Jasmine, I thought, you know, your film was really enjoyable. It was also nice that it had some light, a lot of lighthearted moments sprinkled in.
And some good interviews with a lot of people in the movement.
Yeah. Can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more and where they can watch your film?
Absolutely. Like, you can go to theinvisiblevegan.com. You can purchase the film there. And there's also a link where you can get vegan resources. So it has the books from all of the cast members and their website. So if there was somebody that resonated with you, you can just go to the website and see, you know, all their stuff and what they're talking about. And then I'm on social media. So the Invisible Vegan Facebook page, Instagram at The Invisible Vegan, Twitter at Invisible Vegan.
We've been talking with actress, filmmaker, and vegan Jasmine Leyva. Thanks for being with us, Jasmine.
Thanks.
Of course. Thank you for having me.